Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of Cinemental.
Now, this I can do.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
I don't give a crap if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15-hooker gangbang.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the movie podcast that we can only hope you enjoy listening to as much as we enjoy making. My name is Stephen Hovicki, and this, as always, I'm here with Hassan Godwin and Lathan Conger III. So today's guest is an award-winning producer, screenwriter, director, and novelist, best known for work in the horror genre, such as the 2002 cult hit May, schoolgirl chiller The Woods, and the notorious Sundance shocker The Woman. He created an episode of Showtime's groundbreaking anthology series, Masters of Horror, one of my favorite episodes. He also contributed a segment to the 2015 anthology film, Tales of Halloween. He recently shifted his creative sights to noir thrillers with Blood Money, starring John Cusack, and the upcoming Kindred Spirit. He has also co-authored three award-winning novels with Jack Ketchum. In addition, he has produced or executive produced multiple films, including The Lost, Roman, Darlin', Jugface, and the amazing and my favorite film of last year, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot, starring Sam Elliott. Director Lucky McKee, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
I mentioned to you before we started that, and Latham and Hassan, I don't know if either of you have ever seen The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. It was one of those that as soon as I heard the title, it's you kind of like are instantly gravitated to it because you're like, Oh, come on, this is a movie I have to watch. And I remember
the preview.
Yeah, I was absolutely blown away last year when I saw this. So, and I somehow had missed the fact that Lucky executive produced it. And so I was, when he sent this to me and I went back and checked, I was so thrilled because I was very effusive in my love of this film. When I managed to see it. So one of the things we do, Lucky, is a segment called News That Gives Us Fits.
Move! Don't you hear me?
Hassan, what do you got?
Not much. It was revealed that the very troubled New Mutant is now going to be in theaters. It's going to have a theatrical release in late August, I think August 28th, or you know the end of this. And I think that's optimistic. And I think that it should be a streaming movie. You know, I think it would fare a lot better as a stream movie. And I think that they're hanging that movie out to dry.
I agree with you 100%.
It looks cool. It looks cool as shit too. It looks
right.
Like I want to see that movie. Like it looks like Bill Sienkiewicz drawings come to life.
And it was scheduled for what, February 2018 originally?
Yeah, like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
definitely. So
I mean, that's just.
It's you know I think in my opinion this is me not the podcast speaking in my opinion, Fox just completely dropped the ball on. The whole X series in general, I have very strong feelings about that. And coming towards the end to shelve one of their last two movies and then rejigger everything the way they did so that actually Disney had no choice but to release Dark Phoenix themselves. And it was kind of a compromise release. Now the movie itself is kind of a compromise experience, in my opinion. From where they started with it, being the proprietors of this kind of golden age of just superhero movies, right? To ending as you know, an occupied country, right? Because Fox has been bought out. Their stock in trade is now you know, Disney's to distribute. And Disney is basically, you know, hanging their last few movies out to dry, you know, so that they could recreate the whole thing in their image. I don't know. So it's just, I don't know. The whole thing just kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I don't know exactly what my feelings are on it, but I just think it's foul what they're doing.
I think that there's so much about the details of that merger that nobody outside of Disney and Fox know about,
yeah,
that it's impossible to judge almost anything that was in the pipeline, you know, in that last sort of year of either production or, you know, of development. Because I know a lot of stuff just disappeared.
Yeah.
Once when that whole merger was, you know, even when it was announced, it all got kind of question marks put over their heads. And then once the actual deal was done,
yeah, things started,
whatever it was, whatever, 11 or 13 months later, a lot of stuff just disappeared. And it's impossible for us to guess, you know, like I discussed on a show a few weeks ago where, you know, in digging around through the history of one particular actor, I ended up finding a movie on IMDb. And they had shot, produced, edited this entire film, and then the studio essentially destroyed all copies of the film before it could be released in order to take the insurance payout on the film, because it was actually ends up more than the director had spent on making it.
That's sick.
It made them more money just to destroy all copies as far as the insurance. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Sick.
Right, I know. You're right, and you're the right, and the one person who would,
yeah, who knows,
who would actually appreciate a statement like that is with us today. So, yeah, I mean, that Fox whole thing, the whole Fox thing is tough to say the least. I'm really interested to know how much tinkering has been done to the film since that original release date was set.
Right. You know,
if the film had come out in February 2018, how different is that final product from what we are going to see in August or whenever it shows up on VOD or whatever?
God only knows.
But, yeah, I agree. It's you know, well, now, you know, and then, you know, like I said, you know, until everybody starts, you know, shaking the tree for the Boone cut, then we'll, yeah, you know, then we'll,
and that's what
then
I, we'll know. That's what I'm thinking. I think if they released it on streaming, I think it would be a huge hit. Just
in
dint of the fact that there's not really a lot of other new stuff out there. Give it a chance. But now you're going to ask people to, you know, to go to the movies to go see it. Or is that going to be one of the priorities that people go to see when they're starting to come out of their shells, you know, to go to movies again? Is that going to be one of the high mark, or, you know, the high water mark for people? It's like, oh, I got to leave house and, you know, risk the stigma of getting sick to go see New Mutants. Yeah. I don't think so. You know,
did they say whether or not they were going to do day date VOD on that?
No,
or is it just that was just a straight theatrical.
They said straight theatrical. Though Dolce suspects that it's going to eventually, they're just going to stream it maybe a week later, and
it'll be a quick turn.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're not saying anything about it. Right. So, you know, here's hoping.
Okay,
here's hoping.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you see that in a lot of times with smaller films where they'll put it out in 300 theaters for a month, and then they'll drop it on streaming a month later, yeah, and just be like, okay, there it goes.
And then the rest of us are like, hey, where did this come from? What the hell is,
yeah,
this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did you see, before you go on, did you see Greyhound?
I have not watched Greyhound yet.
I think it's a fantastic movie. You know,
and awesome.
Supposedly it's doing really well on the Apple. I mean, I don't know. You can't trust these metrics, that the brand new metrics that these guys come up with to measure the success on a streaming service. But they said, as a brand new movie on Apple, it's doing extremely well. So they want to do more stuff like that. So
are you saying not to trust it because of its source or because of the actual technical side of it?
Yeah, we don't know. I mean,
they know exactly.
But they're saying it's doing well enough to the point where the revenue is comparable to a theatrical release.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I mean, delay me unlucky. I don't know if you have any input on this. I mean, do you have any idea how a streamer makes revenue on a film that they port directly out like that?
Subscribers, you know, stuff that pulls subscribers in, you know. I mean, they're making so much money per month from, you know, subscribers and all that they have this huge bankroll to make stuff, you know. And the films are usually just getting one big flat fee that's paid out usually quarterly, you know. It's really, really gutted royalties and residuals for artists, you know, because those companies hold that information really close to their vest, you know? So it's like, they're not telling you your movie was watched by, you know, 500,000 people on Friday or 10 million people last month, you know. You don't get those numbers, and there's no way, you know, eventually, it's kind of the Wild West right now, but I think eventually somebody's going to have to figure that out. But I mean, it's the same thing that's happening with the music. You can always look at the music industry, and they're, you know, about 5 to 10 years ahead of what is, you know, eventually going to happen in the movie industry. And, you know, that, you know, obviously with like Pandora or whatever the different music service, Apple Music and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the only way artists can make money now is just by touring, you know, and selling merchandise and stuff like that. It's not off of record sales, you know, their song gets played a million times and they get like a $5 fucking check in the mail.
That's exactly what I mean about, I don't mean that they can't tell, Steve. I mean, we don't have the actual general public doesn't have a means of being able to determine the metric. So we don't know if the service is telling the truth or not about how successful or unsuccessful something is. And that's
right. But what I'm curious about is, like, for example, with Greyhound. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say Apple spent $100 million to make Greyhound, like, you know, a big budget Hollywood film. But it's not like Apple TV exists in a bubble. It's ongoing and has been there for a while. So they spent $100 million on this movie. They put it on their streaming service. How do they know how many views does it take for them to say
this was worth it?
They're not getting paid per stream. They're getting paid monthly, regardless whether they put Greyhound on their service or not.
The primary indicator from a writer's point of view is going to be is watch what that production company or that director or that team does next.
Right.
You know, and if it stays at that same level or if it's diminished or, you know, and sometimes you have to look a couple movies down the line because a lot of people will get their next movie set up while they're in the middle of making that, you know, like that big thing. So. Those are, you know, they keep all that information to themselves.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It really hurts artists. So, you know, and my sister was like, dude, you have to watch Greyhound. This movie is fucking awesome, man. She was like, it's like nonstop, I guess, but I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Without getting into it, because that's
I love late model Tom Hanks too, by the way. some of his best work. I mean, fucking Bridge of Spies and Captain Phillips, just that last scene in Captain Phillips when he's, you know, when he's going through shock is just like some of the best fucking acting I've seen in the last 5 years. He's unbelievable, you know.
Nobody
talks about Bridge of Spies, but that's also one of Spielberg's best movies in a hell of a long time.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
And Hanks is fucking incredible in it. Really subtle, you know. It's not
He is vintage Hanks.
That's why nobody talks about it, because it's just a really well acted film. Man,
you know?
He is vintage Hanks in the movie, and I know we're not here to discuss that movie. So,
All right, Leigh, what do you got?
I just had a couple of quick ones. The ongoing saga of not being able to see Tenet has now
much worse. Has now taken 180 degree turn since last week's show.
Well, right. Basically, the technique that's employed in the film is now being played on me and my social life, because everyone is going to get to see this movie outside of the United States before I do, as it's going to be released internationally on I think August 26th, and. You know, there's this thing called the internet. So someone's going to spoil something and I'm just going to have to detach for days until I get to see this film. And it's all thanks to our moronic government and the way they've handled this, this awful virus that has all encompassed our lives. So that gave me a bunch of fits.
I knew when I saw that announcement that would be the ongoing saga of Tenet and Latham.
There should be an over under bet on how many U.S. release dates there are going to be for this movie, because I think we're up to number 4 now, and I think the over under should be 6.5 or 7.5, and you get a lot of play on both sides of the line. Other than that, I was a little bit surprised by the amount of Emmy nominations Watchmen got. I haven't watched it yet, but wow. I mean, apparently I'm missing that this is just basically a carrier for the social justice themes we're all going through right now, right? That's why it's garnering so much attention. I don't know if any of you guys have seen it.
Hassan can speak to this. I haven't seen
it. In a way,
it's got history in it. right?
Yeah.
It's got like the Juneteenth history and all that kind of stuff in it.
Yeah.
Lathan, did you see the film?
Really fucking good.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the film, and I don't know how much it relates to it or how.
Doesn't really.
I know it's there. Oh, I'm sorry. No. I've seen the film. I like the film a lot. So
I'm saying it doesn't really relate to it. It relates more to the comic books. And the only reason I say that, I make that distinction, is there are certain changes in the comic that there are changes in the movie from the comic book. So it's more comic book specific. Most prominently the ending of the movie, where the comic book it's the squid,
giant space squid,
and in the movie it's Dr. Manhattan trying to edit without spoiling, you know. And so in the show it's more prominently revealed that they went with the space squid option as opposed to the Dr. Manhattan thing. So I think it's a sequel to the book and not the movie. Although,
fantastic.
The movie in and of itself is not that much of a departure from the book, where the TV show, if you allowed for a certain incongruence, the TV show would serve as a decent sequel to it. So, I mean, it works both ways, but speaking specifically, I think it's more of a sequel to the book than the movie.
And then they're also, haven't they said they're not going to make a second season already? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe
so. You're going to have this thing possibly win all these Emmys and have no second season is it an open ending, or do they end it at a place that could be called an ending?
Yes, it ends. That? It does have an ending, though there is sort of a question mark on the end of it. But the question mark, If it stops there, it's not a burning question mark to the point where you're like, I have to know what happens next. It's kind of like, oh, that's really interesting. That's an interesting twist, or that's an interesting possibility. But the story,
like to see more.
Yeah, but the story in and of itself does have its own conclusion. It does conclude.
Good.
Okay.
So I mean,
that's interesting.
I think if I were Lindelof, then I have my issues with him personally, and he's earned a lot more of my respect over the last few years, you know, just listening to him and watching his material. I think if I were him, I wouldn't come back to it, you know, personally.
Okay. Actually, it's not even, it's in the category of limited event series, I believe. Right.
Right.
I think I,
yes.
Yeah. So yeah.
But since it was
just
we,
the most nominations,
since we live in the streaming age, everything's called season one, you know, everything, you know,
yeah.
No matter what.
I just found it interesting. It was that well received. I never knew how well praised it was, or maybe I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, everyone I heard from that I know who's seen it enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, so. It was like The Wire. It's like one of these shows that everyone's like, this is the greatest thing ever, but no one's watching. You know, I think the ratings, I think the ratings for Watchmen were good, but they weren't amazing. They weren't first season Westworld amazing.
Do you think that was an accessibility thing? Do you think people, for the most part, Joe average would look at Watchmen and go, "Well, I saw the movie. I didn't really care for the movie. I'm not going to watch the TV show." Or, "Oh, I didn't read the comic book, so I'm not going to watch the TV show." Or, it is based on a comic book. I'm not going to watch the TV show.
There's so many things. There's so many. First of all, it leans really hard into the racial disparity, right?
Oh,
depending on your point of view, and I'm making absolutely no judgments. Some people don't find that entertaining, you know. So you know, even if you don't have any negative reaction to it, you still might not say, well, you know, you still might not be like, oh, I got to see what happens next, you know. There's a little bit of a slow burn also as it takes time revealing itself.
Big
that can be a turn off, you know,
It took me like three or four episodes. I can't remember which episode. It went into somebody's backstory and it's just like it finally hooked me. It took like four episodes to hook me.
Yeah.
Like really hooked me, you know. And I went through a couple people's backstories and I was like, whoa, this is fucking awesome, you know. But
it took
sweet ass time.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Get move on.
So there's so many things. And I think now that you reveal the whole George Floyd thing and the country explodes into this, you know, racial awareness kind of situation or whatever. It came out in the moments before all this. And I think
timing was perfect.
Yeah, but I think all of our, you know, because even people from my family kind of have a, you know, like, I don't know if I want to watch all this. I don't know if I want to go through all this, you know, this stuff visually. And now everybody's kind of ready for it, you know? So it might get a renaissance, you know, in the aftermath.
Yeah.
But it's unapologetic about some of the imagery that's depicted, some of the storylines that it takes. It's really strong stuff. How it compares to the comic book in and of itself, where we're talking about Alan Moore. So I don't even want to get into that. I think it's a worthy follow-up. Is it as good as the comic book? That's subjective. But it's strong material. It really is strong material. So
cool. Oh, you two sold me on it. I'm gonna watch it now.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a look.
Yeah, it's been on my list since it premiered.
And I just get to see some glowing blue dick.
Oh, but there's always room for that.
It's not as
more so than in the film.
Wow, it's not great. As substantial as in the film, though. Thankfully, it's not.
It's not Billy Crudup.
Yeah, it's not 200 feet tall and and eviscerating Viet Cong. You know, so I mean, there's that. You know, we got that.
Dick spoilers. Okay. A whole new twist on the swinging dick.
Yeah.
All right, Lucky. I don't know if you have anything that you want to talk about entertainment news wise recently.
He's in the entertainment business. Entertainment everything gives him fits. Wise,
oh gosh, I don't know. Now I'm just thinking about blue dicks. I don't know. Well,
if nothing else, you can say that we've done that for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna sleep like a baby.
those aren't pillows.
Oh jeez. Yeah, man, I got nothing. I don't know.
All right. I kind of sprung that on you. Sorry about that. So our guest's guilty pleasure is Sucker Punch.
I lost everyone I've ever loved. Then they locked me away. With nowhere to hide from the pain.
You are safe. It's all safe. What you're imagining right now, that place can be as real as any pain. Don't be afraid. You have all the weapons you need. Your fight for survival starts right now.
I'm gonna escape from here. There's armed guards everywhere. If Blue finds out, we're dead. We're already dead.
This is your journey. If you succeed, it will set you free.
If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
From 2011, directed by Zack Snyder, running time of 110 minutes. A teenage girl stuck in a terrible situation figures out a way to escape inward to her visually stunning fantasy world as a means to solve the issues that confront her, unfolding in the real world we have been transported into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I revisited that masterpiece last night. I watched the extended version.
Oh, good. Uh-huh.
Man, that movie, that movie had me cringing from the word go. It is a fascinating film. You know, it's almost kind of in contrast to something like Dead Presidents, where it's almost like someone, you know, had some, you know, really successful early film or early couple films in Zack Snyder's case, and then kind of had a golden ticket movie, and this is what they decided to do with it, and it's like. Like, I cannot. This is unbelievable that this movie exists. It's like Showgirls or like Xanadu or like, I don't know, man. It's like this combination of just like this dude's like brain and fetishes and all this kind of stuff just like vomited out in like such a bizarre way. I don't know. Did you guys watch it again?
Before? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I watched it with my daughter.
And I, yeah, wow. Oh boy.
Yeah. And how old is she?
She's 13, too.
So. Oh, God.
She could handle it then. She's
that's PG-13. It's not R.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the theatrical.
Which is another strange thing.
Insane. Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of conflicted feelings about that movie. I mean, I like most of what Zack Snyder's done. And I think that he, you know, with something like 300 and with the films that he kind of made after that, I think that that guy managed to capture moving images that felt like comic book images. And I was a comic book kid when I was growing up. I felt, you know, like he has a way of capturing, you know, with his use of slow motion and his speed ramping stuff that he does to like really, you know, again, that's the thing I'm always talking about is like, how do you make an image stick with people? In this case, you know, in Sucker Punch, he's, you know, he's in overdrive trying to do that. And he clearly has, you know, I was reading interviews after I watched it again last night, and there was a lot of stuff where he was talking about, you know, I think the studio, you know, made him cut the film down and made him have the voiceover bits at the beginning, at the end, kind of spell it out a little bit more. But it feels like when you're watching it, this is a movie where no one could say no to this guy, you know? And that says a lot about a person, you know, when they have that opportunity. You know, the movie has three different levels to it. It has the girl who has killed her stepfather, or who has tried to kill her stepfather and accidentally kills her sister, ends up in a mental asylum, and then her escape in the mental asylum, her mental escape is to imagine herself in this strange, like, bordello situation where they do these these song and dance numbers and this what do you call it? What's the burlesque show?
Yeah, burlesque show.
Right.
And then the escape from that reality is this, like, video game, like, anime, steampunk, this mixture
kitchen sink
of all of these, yeah. Lord of the Rings is in there. I mean, there's all this stuff is just like mashed up into this crazy thing. But to me, there's a fourth level to that movie, and that's Zack Snyder's brain and sensibility. Man, especially watching this like post Me Too,
yeah, fucking,
like, wow, you know, and you see a man's. I guess a man's idea of what's hot or sexy or you know, but, and it's all fetishized, but at the same time, there's this weak attempt at making it somehow about female empowerment, which you see in a
lot of films,
and it's absolutely
like it's the most exploitive female empowerment movie ever.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, yeah, exactly.
Yin yang.
Exactly. I'm sorry you had to watch that with your daughter, by the way. maybe should have read up on it a little bit.
She said it was interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, it's just, it's fucking bonkers. I can't believe the movie exists, you know? And it's like, again, you know, I say, you know, I'm pointing to Snyder, but at the same time, it's like, most of these actresses that are in this movie have done brilliant work elsewhere. Oscar Isaac is, we know how great he is.
Yeah, he blew up after that.
Garla Gugino.
All the people working on, yeah, she's fucking great. Like, you know, even up to stuff like Gerald's Game, she's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, like, this entire army of people all signed off on this, and this thing exists. It's like fucking crazy, man. It's fucking crazy. Yeah. You know? There's something kind of amazing about that in an absurd way. It's also, you know, the other thing I was thinking as I was watching it last night, this movie is proof that we would end up with someone like Donald Trump as our president. take from that what you will.
You're just going to leave us with that?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's just something like fantastic about a movie that's just like that fucking bonkers. And man, it is, you know, it, and the depiction of the women in it, they're always crying when something important is happening and just like, just this man's like point of view of, you know, like him doing, you know, making this female driven movie, but told through a male lens is just, I don't know. I find that stuff endlessly fascinating. You know, I
think an adolescent male lens, you know,
totally, like
it's
man.
Such a,
yeah.
It's such a schoolboy fantasy.
Yeah.
He did make every male character in that movie horrible, though. Every male in that movie is bad except for Scott Glenn.
He does.
Who's old.
But, I mean, that's about as easy as having the evil white police officer. You know what I mean?
Well, then that's my
dead president, you know? Which, you know, it is, yeah, it's just like straight down the middle of the 12, 13-year-old male brain, you know? And there's something fascinating about that to me, you know? I don't know why this is the movie, you know, that I decided to bring up. Like, what was it you kind of movie you asked for? Like
a guilty pleasure. A movie that you like, though you objectively know is bad.
Like, yeah, that just it fucking baffles me, man, in such a cool way. But at the same time, I dig what Snyder did with the DC movies, and you know, it's also interesting to watch somebody's career and how they bob and weave. You know, it's like he comes out hot with 300, and then Watchmen does pretty well, but it doesn't really do well, and then all of a sudden he's got this, you know, dream project of Sucker Punch, and then that just like totally exploded in his face, and then he retreats to like the safety of Superman. And
well, yeah. This is still his only film that he's done that's based on original IP.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Everything else he's done has been based on existing IP. So
yeah, that's interesting. Huh. But I mean, you cannot deny the impact that this guy has had on modern cinema, you know, with 300 and someone figuring out how to make a movie that's, you know, these movies that are primarily, you know, they're blue screen movies, you know, or green screen movies, you know,
and how to
create this, you know, and where the, I don't know, how do you call it? The unrealistic qualities of doing something like that to wear that on his sleeve. It's almost like I make a direct correlation to something like 300 or any of these films, these first, you know, few key films that he made. I make a direct correlation to stuff like the Ten Commandments, the Cecil B. DeMille film. There's this artifice to it that has a strange beauty about it that I really, really dig, you know? And I think if you're into cinema history and stuff like that, and you're thinking, you know, the rear projection days and, you know, optical effect days and all that kind of stuff, and seeing that transpose, how he interprets that just on a craft level is really, really interesting to me, you know, and the connection with silent film and, you know, all the rest, but in this ultra modern, like really slick, you know, like, you know, I wouldn't even say Victoria's Secret. I'd say more kind of like Fredericks of Hollywood sort of aesthetic thing.
Well, that and his film, his music choices of using all these sort of 80s, you know, pop and alt alternative music things, but all re-recorded in a very modern style. The only really new one being the Bjork song, Army of Me, which
that there is a fucking Bjork song in the middle of all that is unbelievable. Because she is like one of the most powerful, like artistic, you know, female voices.
Emily Browning sings three of the songs herself.
Yeah, that's crazy. But Bjork, you know, someone as magical and incredible and just so important as Bjork, her thinking of her signing off for something like that is just crazy, man. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I don't think you could tell by the screenplay. If you're reading this screenplay, I don't think you could tell about all the, what you're going to get when this is all done. I think it's a some of its parts sort of thing. You can't read something and then know how this is going to come out.
Yeah. And I mean, the movie is very much, you know, I mean, you think about it, you know, you put it side by side with something like Neon Demon, you know, Nick Reffin movie, where there's, you know, Neon Demon is a much, much more calculated, I think it's a better film, with more to say in
an interesting
way. But in both films, as a like central theme, is about predators, you know, male predators specifically, you know. Yeah. Nick Reffin, I think, handles it, you know, in a much more interesting way. But there's still some issues there with that film, because it's like, okay, it's like I get what you're trying to say, but at the same time, you know, you're talking about exploitation of these women, but at the same time, you're exploiting these women. So,
how does
that come out in the wash, you know?
You can't win. You have to present it somehow, but you have to.
And this is coming from a filmmaker who's been accused of all of these things, you know? on my little weird movies. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, or, you know, is this coming from, you know, is he condoning this behavior, or is he, or is he, you know, examining it and putting it on the, you know,
It is a very funny experience to watch something say back in 2012, 2013 when this came out. 2011. All right.
Because I had just finished filming The Woman, and this is one of the movies we went and saw.
Okay, so there you go. And watching it and thinking that this movie was progressive back then, and then watching it now and realizing just how batshit it is, you know, in the opposite direction, you know? Yeah. It's like it's the equivalent of, I don't even have an equivalent for it, but it's like, like you described, it's equivalent of maybe one of those black exploitation movies that you think are pro-black when you're watching it, yeah. You know, in the beginning, yeah. And then 30 years later, you're like, holy shit, you know,
still just making money.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, when I saw this movie, it, you know, whatever weekend it came out on the big screen with my friends, we probably smoked a joint in the parking lot, so that helped, you know. And looking at this movie, I mean, there, you know, it's, you know, intense sound design, all this crazy visuals, yeah. This and that, you know, and then for me, maybe because we had smoked a joint in the parking lot, it's the sequence with the dragon and the baby dragon where Scott Glenn, they're flying in the airplane. And he lays out what they have to do. You have to go in, you have to find the baby, you have to cut its neck open and take these two stones out. You don't know they're talking about a dragon yet. It hits this level of absurdity that just really, really got me rolling. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. Kind of like the way a lot of people look at something like Showgirls now in retrospect, where it's just, it just starts to get really fucking funny to you. You know, it's like, oh my God, I cannot fucking believe this thing exists. You know? So there, you know, I had fucking fun at the movies that night, you know, and then, you know, you start examining the thing over the years, or, you know, you pick up the Blu-ray and you look at it again. And then the next time, you know, you talk about watching it with your daughter, I watch it with my wife, you know, and she's like, this is straight up bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, fuck this movie. Fuck you for watching this movie. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh damn, you know, like, you know, cause
what I do, what I do, you know,
another problem with me, it's the same way I listen to music. I kind of feel like people, you know, it's probably different for everybody. I'm sure it's different for everybody, but for me, I'm like the music before the lyrics, you know, the music before the message. Like,
yeah,
I can get into a band and have no fucking clue what they're talking about.
Yeah, me too.
The first 100 times I listen to a fucking song, you know what I mean?
Sometimes knowing kind of ruins it.
With cinema, I get overpowered in the same way. I get overpowered by technique. I get overpowered by breaking something down. Even the first time I'm watching it, how they do this, how they do that, and you know, like, oh, that's a cool, you know, like I might try to do my own version of something like that at some point. So you break it, you know, and you know that this guy has made a big mark style, you know, on just like the style of, you know, the modern style of cinema. I actually think that he's added more to the equation than something like The Matrix, you know, in terms of just like certain techniques and stuff like that, you know, that he employs. Not, and a lot of it, not stuff that I would ever do in the type of movies that I make. So I make very different types of stuff. And anytime I've tried to make anything of that, you know, even close to that sort of zone, I've just kind of fallen on my face. You know, there's a certain type of thing that you have to kind of recognize what you're good at over the years, you know?
Well, we'll see what happens when somebody gives you $150 million.
Yeah. I don't think that's happened anytime soon. But that's fine, you know? It's like, I don't have to be Aerosmith playing the big arenas, you know? I'm fine being like the Pixies playing the cool clubs, you know? And like,
right, you'll last longer.
Road, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm cool with that, you know what I mean? And you know, the bigger those budgets get, and I've made a movie for a studio and done all that kind of stuff and been in those situations, the more money you're spending and the bigger the movie gets, the more you have to answer to. You know, and the more you get into this committee mentality, and when it comes to creativity, I think that committee sort of way of making things is death. You know, I think there's, and some filmmakers thrive within that and are really, really good at the diplomacy aspects and all that kind of stuff. But you just have to know how you're wired, you know, and then just kind of like go in that direction, you know. But yeah, I mean, you know, and also watching something like Sucker Punch or watching, you know, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the bigger movies that come out, you know, a lot of time filmmakers like me, you know, who are working with peanuts compared to these films are just thinking like, fuck man, the budget of this movie, I could have made the rest of my movies for my career. And that's no joke.
No, you know that, that's like, that's just
that's no fucking joke, yeah, man. Or just, like what they spent on catering is, you know, is more than my last three movies combined. You know, yeah. That's not a joke. That's fucking true. You know, so it's like, but both of them end up on fucking iTunes or Netflix or Amazon or, you know, and some of them have this big machine behind them. I mean, look at fucking pop music right now. It's a fucking joke. You know what I mean? So I don't know. All that stuff is really interesting. I don't know what any of that has to do with Sucker Punch. I'm talking about myself now.
Well, it is. I mean, Sucker Punch is kind of a, like a pop culture overload, you know?
How many like truly great, interesting movies, you know, or, and even movies that scratch the itches that that movie was attempting to scratch. And I don't want, you know, I don't want to disparage, you know, like I said, I have a lot of admiration for Zack Snyder and what Zack Snyder's done. And I think you learn a lot from somebody, you know, why didn't this one work for everybody? You know, I think,
let me ask you a question. So you said you watched the extended cut. So you watched it with the extra.
It's substantially longer. It's like 25 minutes longer.
It's 18 minutes longer. And the key important thing, the key important scene is the one at the end with John Hamm and Baby Doll.
Yeah.
That happens after she gets punched in the parking lot. It doesn't jump straight from there to her getting the ice pick in the eye and the lobotomy. There's a scene that takes place between John Hamm and Baby Doll, and it's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
I mean, without that scene,
it's what you've been made to expect the entire time. Yeah.
Correct. And it also helps that as soon as he does the job, does a lobotomy, and he's just like, did you see that? Did you see the way she looked at me? It completely changes the effect of that line.
Yeah.
Because up till then, John Hamm had been a guy sitting in a room. Yeah. It's all you see of him.
Yeah.
And there's no connection to him, that is him and his character. So I found it interesting that, A, the extended cut, you know, and that's the scene that they pulled, theoretically, in order to make it a PG-13 film.
Yeah.
The other thing is, Zack Snyder has, as he is unsurprisingly known to do, claims that he has a third definitive cut of this film in his possession that he's never shown anywhere. So
I've had it. I think that, you know, I love seeing alternate cuts of things. I think Coppola does a lot of that. And I think it teaches filmmakers a lot to see deleted scenes and to see, you know, extended cuts of things.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they're, you know, going to make the movie better or anything like that. You know, I more often than not, I dig theatrical cuts more than like extended editions or direct or longer director's cuts. You know, I like tight fucking movies as it is.
Yeah.
You know? Every once in a while something gets gutted and you're like, oh my God, you know.
Is there anything else that either of you have to add to that about Sucker Punch?
When I started watching it, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. This is pretty good. And then as it went along, I started to remember what I didn't like about it. And then it like is just like the whole thing played out again in my head. And, you know, some things in it, like, you know, they have to have them killing robots and guys that don't bleed but shoot out air and, you know, everything to make it PG-13. And I'm like, well, that's clever, but you've got all these scantily clad women. So that's like, you know, a lot of what Lucky is saying is just, it's spot on, because I just don't know what he was trying to say. It seems like it's a female empowerment movie, especially at the end when she says, you know, when she said, you know, he wanted it to be powerful, when she says, now fight. And she's talking to the audience, you know, she's talking to the audience.
Right.
And I'm just like, well, I fight, but I'm confused. So I'm going to have a hard time fighting at this juncture. It's such a confusing movie. I don't know what to do with it. Like, I really don't.
Fight who?
All the acting is great. All the action scenes are fun. I know. I remember one thing now, too. The tone, the switch in tone when Blue kills two of the girls with the gun, I was like, okay, whoa, wait a second, buddy. I mean, I just didn't – it shifted too hard for me right there, and I didn't stay with it at that point, and that's kind of what – why I barely wouldn't recommend watching.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I loved this film when I first saw it because it was just a visual tour de force. Yeah.
Feast. Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I think I do remember knowing that this, wow, this is an absolute adolescent male fantasy, you know? But at the time, it seemed like just knowing that much about it made it okay. You know? Like, yeah, as long as I know that this is in no way a depiction of real life, of women, of, you know, this, the, you know, an understanding of whatever kind of struggle they're trying to depict in the movie, you know, then it's all right to watch a whole bunch of, you know, women in schoolgirl outfits run around in World War I shooting people. You know, it's fine. And then watching it again for this, just it's almost the opposite of Dead Presidents, where I'm like, this is not really that. What can I do with this? Like, I don't know. The material is like, all right, this is still fun to watch, but I don't know. You know, this has no nutritional value because it's not it's offering me no insight into anything. And then also, the visuals in and of itself, the premise in and of itself is so absurd that I don't know, you know, personally, I didn't really know kind of what to do with it. I know that's a really strange way to describe an experience of watching a movie, but, you know, I enjoyed it and I wasn't shamelessly enjoying it. I wasn't ashamed to enjoy it, but I just kind of, it's like the way you enjoy, you know, it's the way you enjoy a bucket of candy, you know you're not getting anything, you know, the residuals are going to be negative for you, you know. you're not nourishing yourself on it,
right?
You know, you're just
sugar high.
Yeah, you're absolutely going for the sugar high. Once you crash, it's going to be really bad. I still believe that movies can be just for simple entertainment. I am of the mind that entertainment shouldn't come at the expense of anyone else, you know? And so, and then there's iffy categories of how that, you know, of how that principle can play out, you know?
I think, Hassan, I just want to, on your point, if that's the strange thing, if it's just candy, why are there these conflicting themes and these, you know, he's attempting some deep themes in this, I believe, but then relents to it being candy. And that's what I don't get.
You're throwing in this social commentary to make up for the fact that this is a tour de force of actual indulgence, you know, male fantasy indulgence.
Right.
And so, and I think it comes up short. I think it came up short in 2011, but who cared, you know? And then now,
now
it's a bigger matter. Like, wait a minute, you know, this is.
I think if he tried putting out a director's cut of this now, people would be like up in fucking arms because they'd be like, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah,
I mean, think about this. Here's an amazing thing I just thought about this film. You never see Baby Doll dancing.
That's 100% correct.
You never see her dancing or any of these people dancing. And that's the heart of what they're doing.
Yep.
And I understand it's metaphorical, but it's like he said, well, I'm going to rev all these guys up that they're going to see all these hot chicks dancing. And then we're not going to show it ever.
Correct.
And I want to know why he did that. And that's where I'm confused.
He felt it wasn't important. He said with all the weapons training and action sort of stunt training and everything that all these girls went through for the months leading up to the production, he knew that he was never going to film any dance sequences and never bothered to have any dance training done whatsoever, with any of them.
Well, it might also be the like the Finding Forrester effect, right? Also, because it's a movie about talking about great writing. And so the movie very, very purposefully doesn't depict any writing whatsoever. It doesn't if you watch that movie, they never really read anything. They do kind of really quick edits of typewriters flashing and, you know, whatever, yeah, and play jazz music in the background because they've got a very Kerouac kind of idea of what being a writer is, but they never read anything. Everybody always is, there's always a scene of someone looking at a piece of paper and going, this is extraordinary, but they never give you what they're in their minds extraordinary writing is. They never, right, they never put their money down on it. So kind of okay, the same thing as the dancing. It's like, well, if we tell you this dancing is hot and you don't find it hot, the movie doesn't work, you know?
It's a good point.
I think visually writing is not the same as watching a woman dancing, but your point's well taken that they decided that the subject of these people dancing was not, seeing them dancing was not relevant to what he was trying to
right,
do.
So, but imagine if you watched them dance and you laughed.
Right.
And he's like, this is supposed to be sexy. This is not working, you know?
I don't know. I wanted to see all five of them dance at some point.
I think that was key to that. I think that that's the whole point. He wanted every single person watching that film to have whatever vision they could think of be of that dance, of that hot dance, and mm-hmm, not define that for anyone. And leave that completely open to every person's interpretation.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what else it would be besides that. So I guess we'll go with that.
despite,
I really don't. I really don't know how to assess. You know what it's a strange movie.
It really is. It really is.
It's really a big budget anomaly is rare, and this is one of them.
This is this film is often referred to as the poster child of what not to do in big budget filmmaking. not very strangely enough. You know, I always love seeing directors who are successful early on in their careers with some level of filmmaking and are suddenly given the keys to the kingdom to do their first original project. You know, they're basically given, you know, this guy's the next amazing action director that, you know, we have coming up. He's going to run he's going to be our guy for the next 20 years. Sure. He wants to do this little movie, you know, give him whatever
let him do it.
Yeah. Give him whatever he needs. You know, the elevator pitch for this, I'm sure sounded great. You know, a girl gets into a bad situation. She creates a fantasy world. Within that fantasy world, she creates other fantasy worlds that are completely over the top video game style action sequences that are all tied together and tying back into the real world. You know, I mean, the concept is sound. If you look at it from that standpoint, you know, once you start laying in all of the details, once you start filling it out with, oh, the girls are going to be in, sort of protective gear. Yeah, you know, in the standpoint that they'd be less protected if they were in swimwear. But, you know, they've sort of got hats, some of them. One of them has a hood.
But they're fighting for their female empowerment, so they can wear whatever the fuck they want.
Well, they're fighting for their freedom. And I think at its core, you know, he's trying to say something about, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you can go back and forth on this. I don't think that anything that's been said about this film is wrong. I also think that there's a lot more that probably could be said. We could want to spend more time on it. I don't really feel like we need to.
Like, for a second, and I just had this thought. Here's the biggest problem with it, and this is why three guys are having, I would call this the first time we're kind of having trouble contextualizing how we feel about this particular movie, you know, in one thought pattern. Take the questionable elements out of this film. Do you find any of the film interesting without the overt sexuality of it, without the...
Sure, I do.
I mean,
yeah, if the action sequences are really well plotted and fun to watch, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
But would they mean the same thing? Like, would you be watching it if they're? I mean, okay, like if they were all guys, and you were watching it, and every time something happens to the guy in a mental institute, he goes off into this kind of video game where, you know, all right, so he and a bunch of guys are dressed up in armor mech suits, blowing things away. It would be an interesting visual, but you'd be like, oh, I don't really know. Okay, I guess he's not. Why am I watching this?
I think it would have to depend. There'd have to be a lot more story support. I think you're 100%.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
So
I agree.
So the movie's fucking flawed, but it works.
You overlook it.
It's
yes.
Flawed. Yeah. The reason we're still talking about it is because of its freaking flaws. And it's. Personally speaking, only by myself, that's why I'm having trouble with it, you know, because I really do like it. And there's nothing wrong with liking it, by the way.
No, that's what I was just going to say. You can't,
but
I don't think you should be damned for watching five girls scantily clad fighting.
It's like trying to defend the nutritional value of Fruity Pebbles, you know, like, the only answer is because they're just fucking good, you know, right, just taste good, you know, but there's no, you cannot defend
the nutritional value of Fruity Pebbles. If you acknowledge that it's just,
that it's junk, you know, it's just junk. And I like eating this junk then.
But I don't think he meant this as junk. That's what the confusing thing is.
Right. Yeah.
We see it as such, but he had something deeper going on here, and I don't think he nailed it.
This is something he clearly put a lot of thought into.
I mean, he thought this, I think he thought it was more of a intellectual idea to have these girls dancing. You never see them dance, but you see the fantasy of them doing the adventure to get their objective of the fire, or the key, or the knife, or the
map.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a vicious circle. It just takes me back to being confused. So I'm just going to leave it where it's at.
I think that's exactly where we should leave it at.
Yeah. I think it's a Zack Snyder independent film is what it is. It's just on a larger budget.
It's the most expensive independent film ever made.
Yeah.
He's not.
I'm happy for the experience, though.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to recolor everyone in a black suit in the damn film.
But
you're talking about the comic book trope, right? The X-Men comic book trope.
I was going to bring this up in the thing that gives us fits. I mean, his new cut of Justice?
Is he
going to recolor Superman in that movie?
No. First of all, there's historical precedent for Superman in a black suit.
I know, but what is he in the current version of Justice League?
Well, when Superman returned to life, he had a black and silver suit on. The S was silver and his suit was black because it was a Kryptonian, I think, stasis suit or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that's
in the original movie or only in his cut?
The death of Superman, the death and return of Superman, he comes back in a black and silver suit. So it seems like he's making a strong reference to that aspect of it. When he comes back, he may be theoretically in a black and silver suit for the duration of however long his recovery is, and then the film will probably end with him in the blue suit again.
Right.
So he filmed that already. He's not colorizing any footage.
I don't know.
I just read that as. I don't know.
The fact of the matter is nobody but him knows. And, you know, he just came out with a statement this week also that said that there will be absolutely not one inch of Joss Whedon shot footage in his version. So
good.
There you go. So what I think is that we should go down the tubes.
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Moving on to Sucker Punch.
Oh, wait. Wasn't there more?
No.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
No, there wasn't. So on this is the USA Advance poster. This image is basically the poster image that was used for the entire campaign, pretty much worldwide. There's only one other image I found really that was used for any extent. But the thing I did find about Sucker Punch is I've never seen so many posters promotional done in advance of a film. And I understand they were showcasing the girls, and obviously we'll move through those because the next five posters are individual U.S. advance posters, character posters of each of the five female characters. Amber, Baby Doll, Blondie, Rocket, and Sweet Pea.
And I have all five of these. The actual movie stands.
Oh. Like,
yeah.
Standees?
Yeah.
Nice. Now, there is an entire second run of individual character posters that are less action-oriented. They're more just kind of like them standing there in their outfits that I did not even bother putting in here. And all the Sucker Punch logoing is done in pink. So those were like the super early advance run. But they were pushing this movie clearly well, well in advance and with multiple runs of multiple character solo character posters. Like I said, I've never seen this much promotional material, visual promotional material put out for a film that eventually would stand to lose so much money. It's kind of mind boggling. Next is the Japanese poster where it was released as Angel Wars.
Angel Wars. Okay. Well, that was a bad choice.
Next is Korean. Again, essentially the same image, color corrected. And then finally, Russian, same thing. Obviously, that first word is not sucker. I did not do the research to find out what that actually says.
Okay.
And then, so next, there were a series of five posters where all the girls were depicted kind of as nose art off of World War II fighter planes. Yeah. With all, but look at your quotes. Prepare to be licked. Really?
Wow.
Yeah. You know, this might hurt a little. Blondes have more fight. You'll die happy. She likes it rough.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just such mixed signals. I mean, it's almost like he's just thumbing.
I mean, and I don't know if he was behind these or not, but yes, I agree 100% that they were clearly.
It's fine. It's almost like he's just like, fuck. He's basically like, fuck everybody in the way they look at women, and you're going to look at it my way for this film. It's strange.
And then, so next is a series of five. I can only assume that these were billboard art. They're ultra wide images, but they're five pretty cool images.
I think some of this is astounding.
I mean, this kind of paraphernalia like puts most modern comic book movie
absolutely to shame.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It really does.
I mean, they did a series of character posters for Watchmen, of course.
Yes, they did.
I don't know that they did multiple runs of those. But yeah, it's
much of this stuff.
There's more, way more than this. There's way more stuff than this.
You just had to stop after a while.
it was pointless to keep front loading all this promotional material.
It was like the Pinterest rabbit hole. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But this was like all official release stuff. So then we get to a poster by Alejandro Hinojosa, which is a nice alt poster.
This is after all the panorama ones?
Yes. Yeah. It's the first one that's named after a person.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's good.
I still like this image.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Lathan.
Nothing. I would say it's good. I still like the first poster the best, but.
Is the basic one?
Yeah, I just think it's fantastic. This is good too.
I like the main U.S. poster simply because I like the fact that it's not their stand. The ground is skewed off at a 45-degree angle. It's just kind of the whole thing is like the text is kind of in the background coming forward. There's a whole lot of playing with depth of field and stuff that I like.
Yeah.
So next is a promotional image that was done by. So when this movie came out. The decoration on the mech, that bunny face, was done by an artist named Alex Pardee, And I don't know, Hassan, if you know Alex Pardee's work or not. He's a big monster illustrator, and he was involved with a movie called Digging Up the Marrow, which is pretty interesting. But so he was hired to actually come up with the concept art for this, the artwork for the decoration on the mech and some of that kind of stuff. So what follows are a series of concept paintings he did of the five girls and Madam Gorski. So you have Amber, Blondie, Baby Doll, Madam Gorski. It was interesting, her like Cat of Nine Tails made out of musical notes.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. Rocket.
Not to be confused with the raccoon.
That's right. And and finally, Sweet Pea.
Well, I can tell you, one thing I can say is I know I recognize each and every one of these without the name.
Right.
I might have gone different ways, you know, but these are... These accomplish what they set out to do.
Yeah, I mean, these were also used for promotions as well. There were short runs of these as promotional posters, I remember, because the year this came out, they were actually tied in with Gentle Giant. And we actually had that mech at our booth at San Diego Comic-Con. Like, we had a life-size model of that giant mech standing in
it. This was something to somebody. Oh, right. Yeah. Someone was banking big on this, right? Yeah, for all this. 100%.
Yeah. I don't even want to know what the P&M budget was for this.
I just would like to know what the original plan for all this stuff was. Like, you know, with the onus behind it was, you know?
Yeah.
That would be a fascinating thing to look into. Yeah.
Next we have a poster that was done by an artist named Ken Taylor.
Yeah, this is great.
And then there's also a variant after that as well that's more monochrome, but I like the blue and taupe version.
Yeah, this one accomplishes the mission, and the blue one is better. It's got the hot and warm, the hot and cold thing.
Yeah,
done really well.
Yeah, I just like the contrast is important with that image, as busy as it is. Then you have an image by someone goes by the name Kit.
Excuse me, the Ken Taylor kind of reminds me of Annihilation.
Oh, some of those images, yeah.
Yeah, just the way it was depicted. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, this one, you know, it's well drawn or well put together. I don't think it works. But
yeah, I feel like that if they had gone the route of making this an animated film, this is essentially what you would have gotten.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. You know? Good point.
And then finally, the next one by goes by the name Ray 780s. I'm guessing an anime artist at heart.
Yeah.
But again, it's not horrible.
It's not bad. I just think it's hard to top that original poster. It's just
yeah, and there's a lot of this kind of stuff that I found, a lot of fan art stuff that you know, mostly focusing on one or all of the girls. I didn't include a lot of it because it wasn't really done as poster art. It was really just done as just a lot of deviant art fan art postings, you know, just some, you know, someone who thought the, you know, someone wanted a reason to draw hot girls, honestly.
I really do got to bounce. I just got a text from them. Like, all right. Man, it was so Lucky. Awesome to talk to you guys.
Thank you so much, Lucky. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And
thank you. Yeah, you know, it's a pleasure, Lucky. Thank you.
If for any reason you wanna come back and do another one, just hit me up and let me know. We'll get you in.
Let's do it, man.
Awesome. Right. Thanks so much, Lucky. Take care of yourself.
Nice to meet all of you. You guys have a good day.
Thank you, Lucky.
Thanks, Lucky. Bye. So I would just like to say thanks to our guest, Lucky McKee. Thanks to Purple Planet Music. Get some of your own awesome music at purple-planet.com. Please check out our website at cinementalpod.com for all the poster images we discuss on our Down the Tube segments. And don't forget to download and or subscribe to Cinemental wherever you enjoy your podcasts. And you can always listen to new episodes at cinementalpod.com. Also, you can follow us on all major social media accounts at cinementalpod. For Hassan Godwin, Lathan Conger III, and myself, we say thank you so much for listening, and always in the words of our friend and mentor, Truman Burbank.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.